Hi, you guys. Welcome back. This is Richard Sachs. I'm your host on Lost Arts Radio. I hope you're having a good week. And we got a lot of things, pretty intense things going on right now. And it's up to us to respond in ways that don't allow them to get a lot worse. Basically, you know, I don't know how much of the full version I should give you, but the sugar-coated version of the situation, I would say, is that we've got a satanic network of mafias controlling the world at the moment, and they intend total destruction of life on the planet, including themselves. And I don't say that lightly. That's after decades of investigation and all the way up to top levels and non-human levels. And we're seeing the effects of it right now. The only thing that stands in the way of that is that you have capability way beyond what you're being told. On many levels, on the physical level, on internal levels, consciousness being the main one underlying everything. And so being able to shake off the hypnosis that is holding everybody in a position of going along with this as if we're helpless is a very high priority. And one of the reasons that I wanted to get our friend Michelle Rauten on the show today is she's demonstrated for a long time that she's shaken off that hypnosis herself very early and been helping others to do it. And the only way you can help others do that is if you do it yourself, and then it spreads. And when she was on last time, she was helping people realize that what was going on with the vaccines, especially for premature babies that were being lined up to be given the vaccine, even though they knew that some of them might die and would stop breathing and would need to be resuscitated in the conventional meaning of the term resuscitated, not the way they've twisted it now. And that was amazing. And we got a much more intense situation with that still going on, I'm sure. But now we've got a new generation of so-called vaccine that we need to talk about and what it really is. It has nothing to do with preventing COVID-19 or anything like that. And we'll get into the basics of why that's true and why you know it just from common sense. So we have probably 3 weeks of stuff to discuss today, Michelle, and we'll try to do that in an hour or so. So welcome and thank you for giving us the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I think the basics, you know, and since this time is going to go by in a flash, I don't want to use it up by saying all of your credentials, but you're a nurse practitioner, right? Neonatal nurse practitioner. There's pages and pages of stuff, but functional medicine specialist, I think that's important because that has to do with everybody's health, not just newborn babies. Mm-hmm. And you have a sanctuary that just started right in town called Wonderfully Made Wellness Sanctuary. And you're actually an educator, I would say, as well as a practitioner in the usual sense. So I want to lay out a couple of the basics right now that people need to be clear on, because the media and the education system are working to make sure you're not. One of them is that the current so-called pandemic, there's no test for what they call COVID-19. And if you get that sunk in, you've benefited enough from the whole show and a bunch of shows. Because if you know that, the number of laboratory diagnosed cases of COVID is zero, because they're all done with PCR or variants thereof. And you can correct me, Michelle, at any point, of course. But I would say
there are many providers that I've sat around with, like medical doctors, who they're like, where's this test for the Delta variant? I can't seem to order one.
That's a special test. Yeah.
And so how do they know what percentage of people have Delta? Because they couldn't possibly be testing for it, especially in the field, because we don't have one we can order. Yeah.
I think the marketing department is the one to determine that. Mm-hmm. But right. But you know, it sounds radical, but to have a variant of a virus, not only do you need a test for the virus, but to have, even design a test for the virus, you actually need a sample of the virus, not mixed with a lot of other junk. And if you don't have that, even if you wanted to make a legitimate test for the virus, you couldn't, because you don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And it sounds overly simplified, but that's really the situation we're in. So we've got this terrible pandemic that can't be proven to exist. And it's being carried on by the media and the government agencies, the health officials, and everybody focused on fear. And they need some sick people, obviously. Otherwise, eventually people would say, wait a minute. And I know the pandemic is terrible, but is there anybody actually sick? And so to get sick people, the original theory was, well, we've got all these people with flu and everything else. Why don't we just use them? And it seems to me they're still doing that, right? Do you agree with that, Michelle?
I mean, there's so many things going around right now. Like, I had three kids come in today. One has the sniffles, one has a cough, but no fever, not the sniffles. RSV is going around. They've been doing, which explain to me why you would do this. They've been doing a nasal vaccine study trial for RSV that it's an RSV virus that expresses COVID proteins. I read the whole study and I'm like,
what does that actually mean?
So basically it's like a live, remember how they had the nasal flu vaccine?
Yeah.
And then they took it off the market because it was causing too much flu, or they said it wasn't working. And then suddenly they brought it back in like last year, the year before. So now they're doing a RSV, which is the common cold, but it can be very bad for very young infants or babies that were preemies, things like that. But I found like a whole NIH document that they're doing. They've been doing a study on that all summer, but it's an RSV virus that expresses the COVID, like corona spike proteins. And I'm like, why would you ever do that? Why is that a good idea? You know? And so now we have all in our area, the hospitals are full with RSV, which is weird because usually it's more of a fall thing and hit at the end of the summer. And any of the employees there will tell you, like, we get full of RSV every year. There's a lot of really sick kids out there and they can't handle it.
Does R stand for rhino something?
Respiratory syncytial virus, RSV.
Okay.
And then the Dallas Morning News reported that the hospitals were full of COVID and they said that your child was going to die. Your child was waiting on someone to die. So there was a bed open. I'm like, A, all the staff I talked to at those hospitals, the children's hospitals, say it's all RSV, it's not COVID. And two, like, what kind of crappy care are you giving that the only way to get out of there is to die? Like, what's happening right there? You know, but this is the fear. This is the constant fear that's being spun.
Just to contrast and compare the two, what is the test to show for sure that something is RSV?
There's a nasal swab. I don't remember if it's, I don't remember what kind of test it is. Honestly, I don't use it very much. The only time I test for RSV is if a baby's like really small, like 5 weeks.
Uh-huh.
I want to know if that's what it is because I'm more offensive with that. Like, I have a very low threshold for intervening. I've never had one of my patients admitted to the hospital for RSV. But they don't even allow you to test kids that are over 5 because it's just like a cold with viscous exorcist snot. Like,
okay.
It's not a big deal, but in the, you know, for here in Texas, they've spun this whole story like all the kids are dying of COVID and the hospital's like, well, it's RSV. Okay. All the kids are dying of RSV. And I'm like,
so the main thing is fear,
fear, fear, fear, fear, fear, fear constantly.
I don't know if you saw it, but there was just a video that came out of a professional hypnotist that analyzed some of the programs that they were doing in Los Angeles to make sure that the school kids were as fearful as possible. And they were having them fill out a checklist every day about whether they were sick, whether, you know, all these different symptoms, and their parents had to help them fill it out, ask them all these questions. Are you sure your head doesn't hurt? Are you sure you don't have trouble breathing? You know, things like that is very professional.
I mean, that children are very impressionable.
Right.
They are, you know, like the kid that lives in the tiny home on my property had a really bad cough. I finally got him out of it with like a Chinese medicine herb. Okay. But my 3-year-old's like, I need some supplements. I have a bad cough. It's like he just is hearing us talk about it. And so now he has a cough and he needs some attention. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't take much to get those kids going. And just by asking them those questions every day, they're going to decide they have it.
Yes, apparently, that's the point.
Also like that now too. But I mean, that's just the way a child's brain works. And I consider that to be child abuse, to be honest, that we're going to teach these kids that germs are dangerous. You're mm-hmm. great. You're dangerous to your grandma.
Exactly.
You should be afraid of everyone and everything, and other people can kill you with their germs. I mean, it's like, how do you right. can't live your life like that. It's all based on fear. I can't imagine the amount of trauma these children are going through with masks on their faces or having to deal with people with masks, which can be very scary and cuts down on half of their intel, you know, when somebody's talking mm-hmm. to them. What are we going to deal with these kids when they're young adults and adults? Like there's going to be major fallout.
Right. I'm still seeing a lot of people with masks on and putting masks on their kids. And the kids are being shown videos in school about everybody should be in a mask all the time. You wouldn't think so if there was common sense, but apparently there's not much of that at all, or this fake pandemic would never fly. Right. So for all the millions of parents that are saying, you know, just believing that the masks are protecting them and protecting their kids. And I've seen signs in stores that say your mask protects me, my mask protects you. Is there anything that you can say to the people that kind of jars that belief system into common sense about it? Are you feeling like it's still possible to talk to some of these people?
I think at this point, if you still have a mask on, I don't think that it's possible. Like we've already been through it all. It's cotton. Viruses are this small, this many microns. Cotton only holds this many microns. But like we've already been through all of that. Like if I walk by you and I spray you with lavender essential oil and you have your mask on, you're like, that smells good.
Exactly. It goes right through.
Like probably it's not working. And if you, at this point, if you still have your kids in it, I don't know. I think what really sends me over the edge right now is I'll be walking around downtown and most people don't have masks on, but there will be kids that have masks on and the parents don't have them on. Like, oh,
that's interesting.
So it's okay for you to breathe fresh air and oxygen. But it's not okay for your kid to. I assume it's because the parents are vaccinated and the kids are not. I don't know. My children have literally never even touched a mask. Not once.
Right. There's no benefits to masks at all, as far as I know, right? I mean, do you know of any?
No. For years, you know, we're taught in hospitals PPE, you know, personal protective equipment. Mm-hmm. We have to be trained to use it. There's a specific way to use it. We didn't even give it to the lay people because they would just end up contaminating things and doing weird things with their masks and their gloves and all of that. Like that was mm-hmm. our job.
Right.
And now everybody just walks around with a sloppy cloth of cotton on their face that they touch all the time. And we have adult impetigo, like bacterial infections and way more bronchitis and sinus infections.
Yeah. Serious drawbacks to wearing a mask, especially for kids.
But I mean, you have to imagine, like, you have these kids that are developing and like me talking like this and then you see my entire face.
There's no comparison.
It is really not good for them. And one of the biggest things I've had to go through with my kids is that they think the masks are scary. My younger ones are 3 and 5. That's like prime age for imagination and all of that stuff. And they do actually lip read still at that age some to like piece things together if they miss something.
Mm-hmm.
And they're reading your body language. And so when we would be out and someone would try to talk to them and they were like, ugh, and I would say, if you would like to speak to my child, please take your mask off. Like they don't like that.
Good.
Then I had to go through the kids, somebody without a mask, I'd be like, thinking they could get out of them. I'm like, no, that's rude. Like,
right.
You know, this is mommy's friend or whatever. So having to go through like teaching them how to draw boundaries and what the appropriate boundaries are. And then sometimes even as an adult, rethinking if that's really the best way to teach that, you know, it's, it's insane.
The situation with masks really is simple. I mean, it's psychologically harmful because you can't see half the face of the person that's talking, especially for kids that are developing in certain ways that adults have already done, hopefully. And it also gets in the way of breathing. I mean, it's really, really simple. You're supposed to get rid of CO2 and the other gaseous wastes out of your exhaling, right? And you can't do that. And it cuts down on the oxygen. And they put these meters behind it, behind the mask, showing that it's not even acceptable for an OSHA environment.
Right.
What you're living in behind the mask. So masks are child abuse. Right.
That really affects people that I say that, but I'm like, I just could not imagine taking my 3-year-old and being like, okay, you need to wear this on your, I mean, I just, I'm not going to hold my kid down and shove a swab up their nose to coat.
Right.
That's the meat. I'm not.
Doing So the testing is another, and one other thing we should say about the mask that some people still don't know, right out of the package, a lot of them have shown to be contaminated. And it looks like they're contaminated with long, black, moving fibers.
I've watched the, I have a friend that has a microscope that did like this steam test. It's so terrible.
I wonder if they're related to graphene oxide content.
That's what I wonder too. I mean, it says, you know, but it says on the swabs, it says slash EO on it. Ethylene oxide, which is a known cancer-causing agent, on the swab.
On the swab. Okay, so masks are, you know, should be incredibly obvious that they have no benefit, and they're very dangerous and harmful. We're just going to move through the basics really quick. And
I think there was somewhere that. Was it my mother-in-law? Because she's like, whatever, but she also doesn't like conflicts. She's like, whatever, if they want me to wear a mask somewhere, I will. And I saw a box of masks on her table that literally says, not a medical device.
Right, right. So we have no responsibility for what happens.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, now the testing. If excuse me, if the virus were really that contagious and terrible, you could test for it by breathing on a swab or touching the outside of your mouth. But they put it up your nose, almost to your brain. And that's if the swab is clean. But it has little hook fibers on the end of it, right? The ones they use that are supposed to scrape the tissue. And it comes up against what's called the cribriform plate, where the olfactory nerves go through to the brain, right? And it's all porous. And it makes you wonder, why do they want to be fooling around next to your brain?
Well, and why they actually put on there that there's ethylene oxide in it. Like, why would you need ethylene oxide in it? No offense, but I can go get a Q-tip, for heaven's sakes, and get some snot and do an RSV test with it, and it will work. Like, I don't need something with a substance on it. I just need something to carry the matter.
Is there some reason they would say they put ethylene oxide on those things?
On
swabs?
So it's on the package. So I had seen another doctor talking about it. I had a doctor call me that has them in the office and said, it actually says like slash EO on there. There are medical professionals looking into it. So I know one doctor that just orders separate sterile swabs for the people that need to have the test, and they use just a different swab instead of the one that comes in the test kit.
But it does bring up the question of what else is on it that they forgot to put down.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not a tremendous trust building thing. And besides, even if they did a test on the outside of your mouth, if it's going to go to a PCR analysis, that doesn't say anything.
You're going to pick up so much. Even in somebody's mouth, there are spit tests now that they have.
Right.
But you're going to pick up on so much matter and all sorts of different viral matter. that could kick off a positive PCR. I always tell people PCR testing was invented for genetics.
It was a lab, like a high-tech magnifying glass, basically.
Yeah, like you're running replication until you get enough replication so that you can run the test to see what the genetics are, right?
But don't you have to have a sample of what you're looking for to make that?
You have to have a sample, but they're also running replication. Like there's so many cycles. So it's like, right, and of course, I'm not going to remember numbers now, but right after Biden took office, they dropped the PCR cycles from whatever, however many cycles we were doing to cycles. And they said, oh, there's so much less COVID.
Just him getting into office was an amazing healing effect, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's completely bogus.
I mean, you can make it, if you're using a PCR and you can, and you are changing however many cycles, PCR cycles you're running, you can change all sorts of things for better, worse, more positive, more negative. And there are videos of the inventor of the PCR test saying, this is not actually what this is for.
He said it could not be ever used for diagnosis.
Yes.
So it's perfect for the fake pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's no, how can I say it? It's like, it's not just the cycles, it's what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you admit that you don't know what COVID-19 looks like, or SARS-CoV-2 looks like, it doesn't matter what you turn the test up to, magnification, because you don't know what you're looking at. Right? And somehow we have millions of labs going along with it. Well, maybe not millions, but thousands probably. I wonder what they're thinking.
I don't think anyone is thinking. I mean, I have to keep telling myself that. I was like so angry this morning dealing with the hospital medical kidnapping situation. And I'm just like, I don't understand what these healthcare workers are thinking. What are they thinking? And I just have to, I guess they're not. I mean, everybody's so trained to toe the line yet again.
What our
new policy is, so I'm just going to do it. I mean,
I mean, we are that far gone, I guess, right? Where almost nobody has basic logical thought anymore.
Mm-mm.
That's hard to absorb, I think, if you're not one of the zombies. I mean, maybe we're zombies at levels we don't know, but compared to the average, you know, if you're somewhat aware of what's going on, it's really hard to, you know, Alex has had some great shows and a lot of other people exposing what's going on. But they have these, and Mike Adams and all these other people, but they have doctors on there who say, oh yeah, the pandemic is a hoax. The numbers are, you know, really low. They don't get it. There are no numbers. They come out of the PCR test.
Yeah. Or when they're like, look, the peaks, you know, we're.
Yeah, no cases.
We have peaks twice and we're, you know, this is over. And I'm like,
there's damage.
It's not over because they're just, it's going to be whatever they want it to be next. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So if that is all bogus and the flu and colds and RSV and all these things are pretty much just going along normally and being renamed, then why would you want to have a pandemic like that? I think that question should come up.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons, apparently, is to get everybody to have the shot.
Mm-hmm.
And not just one.
Not just They're one.
It's two, evolved.
Now it's three, and then it's going to be every 6 months.
Exactly.
It's never going to end as long as the people keep going for it.
So there's a few basic objectives which you can just get from observing. One is they want everybody to get a lot of injections.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, clearly, assuming these things aren't just happening by wild chance and at random, which I don't think anything does really, if you understand it. Another objective is to shut down business and totally destroy the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that because there have been more serious sicknesses in history and they didn't do this. And the response is shut down business, make sure production ends and money supply explodes. And people think they can't understand economics, that it's really complex, but the basics aren't. And if you stop the supply of goods because people aren't allowed to work and companies close, and you explode the supply of money, then the money becomes worthless. Mm-hmm. Each dollar is proportionally less mm-hmm. in what it'll buy. And so they're doing that as fast as they can. And apparently there are plans for handing out a whole bunch more money, which keeps people believing that the government's trying to help them if they don't understand. And then when the money won't buy anything, they have to switch to a central global money system where you get digital money, but it's conditional. So if you say anything out of line or do anything out of line, you just don't get your money that month.
Mm-hmm. Or you're not vaccinated.
Or
come to your weekly like nose brain jab or whatever it is they want you to do.
Exactly.
I just keep watching the housing, you know, the houses are worth more and more and more, and the properties are worth so much money. And I'm like, where's all this money coming from?
It's being issued on computers.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then just look at all you have to do. I always tell people, if you want to know what's going on with the dollar, just watch your food bill.
Right. Yeah, food prices are reflecting not that the food costs more, but the money is worth less.
Yep.
Same thing.
I mean, my food bill right now is astronomical. You know, we have our family, we have people over to eat all the time. We eat very clean food.
You don't buy the cheap junk.
No. Nope.
And there's a big connection that the medical industry forgot to mention between what people eat and the condition of their health. Mm-hmm. Forgot to mention that in medical school too.
Yeah.
So a lot of the doctors are
getting it like 6 hours and all of that.
Total. Yeah.
Total. And you know what they're telling him is like, you know, milk does a body good. And
that's right. So does Wonder Bread.
Corn oil's better than all the other oil, and you need right. to have many servings of grains a day, and mm-hmm. Roundup is fine.
I mean, GMOs are good for you.
Yes, exactly.
They fight climate change and everything.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's total deception, and one of the areas that they chose to use to change society is health, because people have been taught to worship the health authorities and never question them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's being used with bad intent right now. And the people are saying cases are doing this or doing that, and they're going by lab, you know, publicized cases. It's all fake. That's not it. There are no official cases. So all the numbers are bogus.
I mean, really, they're just using it as a weapon. It's all like your COVID diagnosis in the hospital is a weapon against right. Like, basically, they're stripping all of your life, your rights from you. You say, yes, this is a positive COVID test, and they stick you in the COVID unit.
That's right.
You lose all your rights.
Yeah, which is really interesting, because it's all based on the idea that the rights that you have, which was the foundation of the idea of starting America, is that your rights come from God and they're unalienable.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just declare an emergency and have no rights. And they're figuring nobody remembers that.
Like the First Amendment?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, during a pandemic, no, you have no religious rights. You know?
Right, yeah.
Because if there is no patient bill of rights in the hospital anymore, if you are positive for COVID.
Have they written that down in the policy?
No, I mean, maybe, but now I will tell you that they are doing decision trees, and their decision trees for COVID, they are taking into account your vaccination status.
Mm-hmm.
and what treatments you get or which bed you get or all of that kind of stuff. Like it is, it has been written into decision trees. I've had nurses send me a few from all over the country begging me not to share them, but it's in there.
Right.
And of course, I mean, it's blatant now. We have stories in the media of doctors saying, I'm just tired of all of these unvaccinated people coming in here. They should just stay at home and die. Like, well, send all the smokers with lung cancer home too. And if somebody comes in an ambulance after a car wreck and they didn't have their seatbelt on, you should just kick their butts right out the front door and watch them bleed out in front of you. I mean, but and like people are watching this going, I agree.
Yeah. It's like, wait a minute.
No, it's
how are people functioning? They're repeating what they're hypnotized to believe. Mm-hmm.
I had a moment this morning because I've been dealing with all of these hospital situations and I'm so overrun. I mean, there's over 150 messages a day I just literally don't respond to, which is
right.
Like very upsetting and draining on me, but I literally can't. Like I could work all day and all night and never sleep or see my family or deal with my own clientele and run my own business. Like literally I could do that 24 hours a day and nothing else. And I still would never even make a dent because they take these patients, they don't update the family. These patients that are not doing well, they're getting informed consent from them, which is a complete lie. Even you'll have loved ones talking to the person on their cell phone and calling the nurse and going, he's not in his right mind. Like this is not how he is. Oh no, he's lucid. He's fine. So I started having people, so when you have to drop somebody off that's sick, have them immediately sign a durable medical power of attorney over to you or over to someone in the family that knows medicine or has, you know, a titanium steel rod for a spine, like something that they're having to deal with you and not bully this person, especially if you're committed with COVID. Right. And so the person that this morning when I said, make sure you do this, she was like, they said they didn't have any of those there. I'm like, what? An entire hospital with like 780 beds has no medical power of attorney paperwork.
Okay. So
like this is where every single turn that we take, we're like, we are not going to stand for this. This is not okay. You're medically kidnapping these patients and then medically neglecting them and emotionally abusing them by leaving them by themselves. When I'm like, okay, well just sign over a medical power of attorney because then they can't bully the person who's sick. They have to deal with the loved ones. Now they don't have the paperwork. I'm like, just push the print button on your computer and print it out.
Okay.
And so, that's what I wonder with these healthcare workers. I'm like, where's your brain? Like, what on earth are you doing?
That's been the objective of the educational system for decades, is to make sure nobody can think. You know, but let's put the context on what you're saying. These people are in the hospital, right? You're talking about people that are in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And we've just debunked the pandemic. So what are they in the hospital with and for? What got them in the hospital?
I don't know. They can't breathe. I can tell you that.
Okay. And that is going around.
I call it all COVID pneumonia. And I'll, like, when I get involved with these people, I'm like, well, what have you done for them? Like, what are you doing? Well, they're on oxygen. I'm like, but what are you what are you treating them with? Well, we're giving them remdesivir. I'm like, well, 8 to 30% of patients on that have kidney failure and other organ failure and die. Okay. And it doesn't work very well. It stops mRNA viral replication. Like we've never read a chest x-ray before and said, chest x-ray, fungal pneumonia, COVID pneumonia, flu pneumonia, bacterial, like it's an x-ray. You can see what the lungs look like, but we have all of these people that they're not treating with anything, and they give them like 500 milligrams of vitamin C and say they're giving them vitamin
C.
Terrible. Like they don't mitigate inflammation. They have people on 60 liters of oxygen, which is a ton, and they refuse to start an IV to give them fluids and nutrition. I had one patient that I'm like, he says he's dying of thirst. Well, he can take his BiPAP mask off and take a drink of water. I'm like, why can't you just give him an IV? Like, you know, he's expelling so much moisture dealing with all this air.
Right.
Like, what are his electrolytes? Oh, we don't check that in COVID patients. I'm like, are we in Haiti right now? Is your lab machine broken? Like, why? They're just not doing anything. They have their protocol that the government gave them that is right. terrible. And these people are just in there dying. Meanwhile, we have an IV place down in Dallas that's giving people fluids and vitamin C, and they'll run a blood count on them and go, oh, yeah, it looks like you have an infection. They'll give them IV antibiotics, send them home. They're fine. I mean, they're like, I feel like they're running like a mini hospital. They're just actually treating people.
So these people that we know the policies and the protocols are different, and they're coming down probably from CDC and maybe the UN and WHO and everything. But are these people victims of a sickness that was happening before? Is this any different, or is just renamed, or what do you think?
I think it is different now. I feel like it's different right now than it was last year. And it seems like the men are having a harder time than the women. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know.
You don't know what it is, but you know what helps it.
Yeah.
What the general symptoms of what you're talking about, is it inability to breathe?
Mm-hmm.
The same as they had in New York City when the supposed pandemic started, mm-hmm. when they had the syndrome and the lungs were working fine, but they couldn't get oxygen into the blood. That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And
also, I had somebody call me yesterday and they said, well, if he's not better, we're going to put him on a vent in 2 days. And I'm like, I've worked in an ICU before, and a vent is a life-saving device that you either need right then or you don't. Like, how would you decide that somebody needs a vent 2 days from now? Either they're going to be worse when they're bad enough to need a vent, or they're going to get better and they're not going to need it.
Right. Isn't a ventilator more appropriate if the diaphragm doesn't even work and there's no expansion of the lungs on its own?
Right. So respiratory failure, like the
right, which is almost never the case in the people that they're putting it on.
Oh, and I'm getting calls from people and they're having a very hard time breathing. The patient is in the hospital and the hospital is saying, we're going to pitch him on a vent. And the person's like, no, I don't want a vent. I'm like, that's why I don't understand what these healthcare professionals are doing. I mean, I think they've been in this for 18 months and they've been taught for years, protocol. And this is right. follow the policy. And now we have the government involved, the CDC saying what they should be doing. And they're just doing it when it doesn't make any sense.
Unless it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that you're trying to make the death numbers high enough so that everybody says, yeah, it is a terrible pandemic. We'll do whatever you want.
At this point this morning, I just closed my eyes. I'm like, I knew it was going to get bad and it's still going to get worse before it gets better. Mark my words on that. But my brain is a little lost right now. It makes me feel better that I have nurses contacting me every day going, I can't take this anymore. Like the horrible way they're treating patients in the hospital. I can't do this anymore. I'm going to have a different job. So, but the ones that can't take it anymore are leaving because they can't watch it anymore. And then they're mandatorily vaccinating all of them. So all the ones are like, oh yeah, sure, let's do it. You know, so like we're whittling away, right? And as time goes on, all we have left are these core people who are really good at following orders and not
their
tertiary thought process. And that's literally all you're left with.
It's just like what they're doing to the military in a different industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting rid of the good people as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. And the objective is clearly to cause a lot of damage mm-hmm. and on multiple levels. So what you've been doing that you're overwhelmed with right now, that because there's way too much for one person to do, what kind of service were you giving these people that were, again, just to make it clear, these are people in the hospital, mm-hmm. respiratory distress syndromes, and there are two ways of diagnosis. One that means nothing, which is the PCR test. The other is clinical observation, oh, you can't breathe. I can't get oxygen. You have these different kinds of distress. You don't need a PCR test to know that. And they need help and they're being given bad treatment. So what kind of service were you trying to give them for being an advocate, changing the protocol?
Well, I mean, I've been providing advocacy services for parents in hospitals for years. And so that would be people that were in labor and delivery, postpartum, newborn, neonatal ICU that felt like they were either being bullied or not listened to or circumvented. Those are easy. I have 100% success rate with that. Parents are like lions who are really probably the maddest they've ever been in their life. And you wind them up and they're like, and that's it. That goes, okay, okay. You know? And so very rarely do I have to get involved now, especially in my area, since people know who I am in those units, I don't have to get involved. I did get involved. I have gotten involved twice. One, I had a mom who delivered at home and then it ended up with a uterine infection and she had to be admitted to the hospital. And they told her she couldn't have her newborn with her because of COVID, but she could go to the garage to breastfeed the baby in the nasty garage in downtown Dallas every 3 hours. So you can imagine, I called up there and I was ripping everyone a new one. And surprise, she got to stay. She brought the baby in. I was furious. And the other one was a baby in the neonatal ICU and they would not listen to this mom. Like, you're not putting formula powder in my kid's breast milk, you know? Yeah. And this is a weird unit with a group of doctors that I've never dealt with before. So I had to call in. I got that all taken care of. And the medical director actually called me the next week to thank me and ask me some questions. I almost fell over. Wow. But now people have been asking me to get involved with COVID patients, which adults aren't my favorite. Because you have so many people involved. You have the patient, and we've already talked about people thinking doctors are gods and they don't want to argue with them. And they apparently believe hospitals are prisons. I don't know. But especially if you're dealing with the older generation, but you'll have the patient or the spouse or one of the kids. If anyone is circumventing what you're doing, you can't get anything done. But I've been involved because they take these patients that are positive for COVID and having a hard time breathing, and they put them in the hospital and they do their crappy little protocol that is more harmful than good. I can't tell you how many calls I get that, like, he was actually better at home. Like, he's tanking now that he's in there. And I really think it's this drug they're giving him. I'm like, it's probably the remdesivir. I hear it over and over again, but they won't let them have visitors. The patients are very, very stressed out. They're scared because they're trapped in this little room. The staff have policies to only check on them every 4 hours to lessen or mitigate their contact with the disease. And like, it's been 18 months. I mean, for God's sakes, like, if you haven't gotten it and died from it yet, you're the most exposed to whatever. What are you, you know, so they're kind of, they're neglected. They're not doing much for them. And then the family is like, we want this patient to have ivermectin. We want this patient to have high dose vitamin C. Are you giving D? Are you giving zinc? Like, he can't eat and drink. Why isn't he on TPN IV fluids or, you know, all of these things? The doctors won't call them, the family, to update. The nurses are pretty rude and snarky to them most of the time. Like, we're taking care of him. He's fine and he's lucid. The patient's freaking out. And so I get involved and have them pull the chain of command. Like, someone is coming in there to sit with that patient. And it's much worse than it was last year. Last year, their policies at least said if somebody wasn't lucid, you could have someone in. You know, there were all these different loopholes that we would just work on and get someone in. There's none of that now. They're just like, no, the answer is no. So we end up on a family care conference with their side, like at least one physician, nursing, maybe management or someone from administration, social work. Usually there's a lawyer by then if I've gotten ugly enough, or the family has, and then the family's on. With me would be helpful. We've had a lawyer and I just don't have time to do this because it's so, I'm booked and it's so time. It takes a lot of time. And then in a hospital, when you're trying to get a meeting with all of those groups, it's like, okay, we think we can do it at 3:30. And I'm like, well, I'm booked at 3:30. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So anyways, if I can get a patient, a visitor, if I get a visitor in there 100% of the time, they get better and go home.
Wow.
100% of the time. Why do you think that is? Well, one, they're not freaking out anymore. They're not scared, but they actually have someone to take care of them that's in the room instead of marginally checking on them for every 4 hours. And I highly suspect they're bringing them things and getting it to them in the room.
Right.
You know, like they're giving them things to mitigate cytokine storm, and they're giving them anti-inflammatories, and they're bringing them good food and fresh pressed juices and like, okay, it's been 15 minutes. Take a sip. I mean, they're just taking care of them.
Yeah.
You know?
So which group of people would you like to tell what they're able to do on their own? Is this people who have a relative or a friend in the hospital who they start to suspect is on a protocol that will succeed in killing them? Or what's which group is it that your information is most urgent to get to?
I mean, I think that right now, the most important thing is that for everyone to realize, like, doctors are not gods. Like, you are not a protocol, and your loved one is not a protocol, and a hospital is not a prison. And we're not going to stand for this anymore. I mean, they are medically neglecting these patients all over the country. You know, I'm seeing it just in my area, but I get contacts from all over the country, and you don't have to stand for that. There are things you can demand things. You can use big, mean, ugly words. You know what I mean? You can say, hey, to the charge nurse, I'm not okay with this. We don't feel like my loved one is safe. He is medically neglected. You're not doing anything for him. This is emotional abuse that he is by himself, and we are not going to stand for it anymore. The doctor hasn't even called us. We haven't even had a full update. And by the way, we don't think he's lucid enough to make his own medical decisions, or he's asking for a medic to sign medical power of attorney papers because he is exhausted and he can't deal with y'all anymore.
Do you think the protocols are worse being applied to a patient that's defined as a COVID patient than the rest of the patients, or are they?
Absolutely. I mean, what other disease do we go, oh, well, you have TB. Sorry about that. We're not going to do anything. Go home. And when you can't breathe anymore, come back. I'll see if I can save you. Like, there's no other illness or presentation of symptoms in like all of medicine that you literally do nothing until they're really, really, really sick. And then you're behind the eight ball and you're trying to catch up again. And they're, you know, I tell people years ago when they came in and they wanted to do the electronic medical record.
Right,
so,
right.
It's so we can share charge, handwriting's bad. I'm like, this is bad. This is bad. Because the next thing they did was they wrote protocol. So it's literally like someone comes in for chest pain. Like, you go to the order set and you're like, chest pain, click, sign.
Right.
There's no thought process. And so you're dealing with a total idiot that might be helpful, but like the order set is just supposed to be a shortcut for you that you don't have to pick each individual one, but you should still be looking at the picture and going, oh, and I need to add this and I need to add that.
Right.
What does the picture look like? Oh, you know, actually I've noticed this. Let's make sure we handle that. Nobody is doing that.
It's getting more robotic.
It's very robotic. This is our protocol. And if it doesn't work, he's going to die. Oh, if he really wants to be with someone, we'll just send him home to die. Being around people is that important. Had a lawyer.
Right. So there's two parts maybe of what your knowledge would help people with in that situation. One is how to get the hospital to do what they're supposed to do to actually make some positive difference. The other is, should they be in the hospital at all?
Right.
And what can you do without going there before you're at that stage?
Yeah, I think one of the problems we have is that the behavior of what's going on in the hospital is so absolutely egregious and horrific is that people don't want to go. And so when they get there, they're very, very, very sick.
Okay.
But at the same time, I don't blame them because I don't want to go in there at all either.
Well, they don't want to go, but they don't know what to do to prevent having to go, right?
Right, right. And then finding a doctor, you know, a lot of people would use like America's Frontline Doctors, and I think another one's called PUSH now, but now sometimes they're like, well, we can get to you in 5 days.
Yeah, they're a little busy, right? They're having the same problem. So if we're talking about specifically, since the PCR tests are bogus and meaningless, we're talking about people just noticing that they're having trouble breathing and the things that go with that, right? That's the category of patient we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, if they're...
People know, you know how it is when you're sick, like you get the thing, your throat hurts and you're like, oh, mm-hmm. you know, I'm malaise, I don't feel good. And then maybe you get the fever. You know, I always say like the alternative people, we've kind of known what to do with that for a long time.
So yeah. What if people have no idea what to do with it? What would you tell them?
We do vitamin D. So like for myself, so I don't know anybody's other stuff.
Right. You can say what you would do.
For myself, if I start feeling something coming on, I do the vitamin D hammer. So I do 50,000 IUs of vitamin D 2 days in a row. And then I go down to 10,000 a day. Vitamin A, I'll do the vitamin A hammer for 200,000 IUs 2 days in a row, and then I stop because you don't want to get toxic in that. But you just
right.
the two big doses. And we've been doing that for measles and other things for a long time. I'll get my liposomal vitamin C, and I'll take however many spoonfuls, and I'll wait a few hours, and I'll take some more, and I just keep taking it until I get like my tummy rumbling, like it goes, you know, it's moving all around, or I get a loose stool to know that I'm saturated.
Right.
And then the next day, whatever that dose was, if it was 20,000 milligrams, and tomorrow I'll take, you know, 15 or 18 instead. So I just keep things like that up. I rest, I drink plenty of water. I mean,
it's not that complicated, really.
Zinc.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Zinc, what kind of doses and what kind of form of zinc?
I have zinc picolinate.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It makes me nauseated. So some people can take 50 milligrams a day just fine. I can do about 20 milligrams. And if I think I need more, I can do it twice a day.
Right.
But the dudes tend to go overboard on that one and make themselves throw up. So it just can make you nauseated.
What kind of vitamin C?
I have liposomal vitamin C, which there's tons of those. There's the lipospheric liposomal vitamin C. New Medica makes liposomal vitamin C. There's a lot of choices out there for now.
Capsules or powder?
I don't do the capsules if loading, because if you have too many capsules, it can make your stomach hurt.
Right.
So powder or the liposomal is usually a liquid.
Okay.
And then, you know, the current homeopathic remedy
mm-hmm.
using in India for the symptom set that is called COVID is phosphorus 200,
mm-hmm.
which we started out with a different remedy last year for that. But I find it interesting that it's phosphorus 200 because that's a remedy that you would use well for fear.
Interesting.
Yeah. But that's what my doctor friend in Mumbai says, is they're using phosphorus 200 for that like symptom set now.
Okay.
Seems to be working well. And of course, he also said over there, if you feel like you're getting sick, and you can just go to the pharmacy and they'll give you a pack of what you need. So he said they're not really having any deaths over there.
A pack of what you need, not...
Like they'll give you a pharmacy pack of ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, zinc. It also has doxycycline in there, which is an antibiotic, which I find interesting that everybody, I mean, we should be judicious with our antibiotics, but I often wonder how many of these people have bacterial pneumonia and they're just not.
Right. I don't think they're doing those packs in US pharmacies. I'm just guessing.
No.
What kind of vitamin D were you talking about?
I have vitamin D3. I have one by Apex Energetics. It does not have K2 in it. I don't tend to load with one that has K2, but there's plenty, you know, once you're doing a maintenance dose, there's plenty that have the D3 K2 in there. Like Orthomolecular has one, Thorne has one, Seeking
That's
Help.
When you're down to your maintenance 10,000 a day or international mm-hmm. units or whatever you were saying.
Yeah. Okay. If I'm trying to do a load, I do the liquid drops and hold it in my mouth for a minute before I swallow, and then I don't eat or drink anything for 15 minutes.
Load meaning big dose.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so that's people that
I'm really bad at taking stuff every day. Just so I'm like,
you just forget.
I'm just not. I don't know. I find as a mom, like my kids will be like, "Can I get my supplements?" And I'm like, I dole it all out to them. I get to work, and I'm like, I was standing right there. Like I could have taken my own, but your brain goes check because the kids are taking
right. All yeah. done. Okay, so those are the people that are trying to stay in good enough shape to not go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm. And there's other things like, you know, there's so many mobile IV clinics now that are doing IV vitamin C and Myers cocktails with B vitamins and magnesium.
Mobile, you mean they'll come to your house?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Myers, wow. Yeah. Wow. And there's always... There's IV shops around that you can go to. And then there's always underground people. You just have to ask them around.
What do you think are the most valuable IVs like in that category?
The vitamin C. I mean, I really think the vitamin C, the Myers cocktail and B vitamins and the glutathione push is making a huge difference for people. Right. And you just have to remember that we're all very stressed out. Like even for someone like me who kind of lives in my own bubble, I mean, I live on a compound for heaven's sakes that I own. Like we have four houses that have people in there and we're all living the good life out there and we have chickens and eggs.
Yeah.
And like, you know, when I come to my office and I'm usually kind of in a bubble with the people that come to see me. But still, it's very, very stressful dealing with all of this, especially for people who are working in an environment where it's like, did you get your vaccine? Oh my gosh, your mask isn't over your nose. Right. You're really stressed out. And when you're stressed, it drains your B vitamins and your glutathione.
Right.
And then you catch something and you don't have anything to work off of. And then you don't feel good. And you're trying to take all these pills and stuff. And it just.
Right. Yeah. Having the stress go away is definitely the best if you can do it, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, okay, so that's all that you mentioned, a little glimpse of normal life with the chickens and all the different things like that. That's how it, you know, if we had that kind of situation for everybody, almost none of this stuff would be going on.
Like when you get home, like go outside, stick your feet in the grass or the dirt.
Yeah, grounding.
Stop watching the one-eyed monster, as we call it. Turn the TV off. Get off Facebook, for heaven's sakes, that place is evil.
Yeah, like learn to take care of yourself, mm-hmm. right? Which is not equal to taking drugs.
Mm-hmm. Get out in the sun.
Sun was a really good invention. And
it was like the first health invention of all time.
It's still working great.
Make things live and grow.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And that for the people that end up in the hospital before they even realize what's going on, you can't really interact with them too much because they're isolated, but you could interact with a relative.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody on the outside could get the idea of what to do. And that's what you were talking about on the Dr. Artis interview, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is great. Everybody should watch that. I thought it was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to recap the important points of that, that people can use this video in addition to the Dr. Artis video to be really clear on the current best strategy for dealing with a relative that's trying to help somebody who's in the hospital jail?
Do you mean like getting to them to visit them or to...
Well, you were saying the updated situation has even developed a little bit since you were on with Dr. Right. Artis, right? So I think you're talking to a relative or a friend
mm-hmm.
who has somebody who's imprisoned in the hospital, categorized as a COVID patient in, you know, distress physically and being made worse and on the track to being... ending up as a COVID fatality. And mm-hmm. what do you tell the person on the outside to do who has no idea? They just wish they could do something to help.
I mean, it's still the same, is that you have to be the very loud squeaky wheel and just say, I'm not going to stand for this, but you have to go through the chain of command. And so I talk about the chain of command a lot, that you need to call and say, I need to speak to the charge nurse and say, we're not okay with this. We don't feel like our loved one is safe. He says he doesn't feel safe. Once again, don't have a patient circumventing you. That's not helpful. you know, that he's being medically neglected, nobody is checking on him, you know, whatever, there, everybody has their own thing on top of that. Like, he says X, Y, Z, why haven't you addressed this? But you're not actually treating him. There are protocols you're using all around the world you're not using, and it is not okay that he's by himself. And so I need somebody to call me back. I know you're busy. I know you're busy, but I need somebody to call me back within an hour to let me know how we're going to work this situation out.
And when you said it's not helpful to have a patient circumventing you, what do you mean by that?
So I had one woman I was trying to help, and I would talk to her on the phone. I thought, is she just not hearing what I'm saying? And finally, I'm like, can you have a friend call me? Like, I don't understand what's happening here. So the friend gets involved, and she realized that her husband, who was very sick, was like, oh, it's fine. I don't want to make anyone upset. It's okay. And so then they're like, oh, he just has a crazy wife, right?
Okay.
So for sometimes I have, like, a wife in there, and especially the older generation, and the kids are going like, this is not good. We need to get a hold of this situation. And so usually they pick one of the kids who has more of a personality like mine to help them. And then like the husband steps in and is like, I'm so sorry for their being here. It's fine. And so you can't have that happening. I always say, how many family members are involved? And is there anyone that's a pushover or can't stand conflict? I need them to say literally nothing. Like, they cannot call, they cannot show up, like, they just stay out of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what do you want done for the patient when you actually reach somebody who can change what's happening?
So I feel like in the end, the thing that's helping, honestly, the most, like I said, is getting someone in there. Right now, I have so many people that are contacting me and they're like, you know, we want the eye mask protocol or the FLCCC, the ivermectin. They want all of that stuff. And the doctors are just like, no, not in our protocol. No, not in our protocol.
Right.
But in the end, what you really have is you have someone who's sick and they're scared and they really don't feel good and nobody's taking care of them. And how would anybody get better in that situation? And it's humanity. Everybody deserves to have a visitor. I mean, you know, if the husband takes the wife in and they say she has COVID and sticks her in the COVID patient in the COVID floor, the husband's already been exposed to whatever she has. Like, we're not.
Yeah, there's no logical reason to keep him out.
There is no logical reason except for you're living your best life because you don't have to deal with family members and you can do whatever you want. You don't have to deal with informed consent. You don't have to update anyone, which they shouldn't be updating by the phone.
Right.
But at this point, I think getting someone in there, because that's been my biggest success, is that when we get someone in there, they turn around. And then honestly, usually the staff was like, wow,
that's incredible.
So great having you here last night, to the loved one. And I'm like, yeah, because it makes your life easier. Like, you don't have to check on this person all the time because there's someone in there doing everything. Oh, he's smiling this morning. He looks so much better. I'm like, put two and two together.
So is it enough without changing the harmful protocols they're doing, or do you need to do both?
So, I mean, if it were me, if one of my loved ones goes into the hospital and is admitted to the COVID floor, they absolutely are not getting remdesivir. Like, over my dead body. I get so many calls a day that there are massive problems. And I would be in there.
Right.
Of course, I know all the medical stuff. And so I could be like, why aren't you doing this? Have you checked this? What's this level? All of that kind of stuff. And not everyone can do that. But they should be at least doing something. If we have all of these other countries reporting that ivermectin is working, hydroxychloroquine is working, it's political here. It's just all politics. None of it is actually based on anything real. There's no reason why hospitals can't give 20 to 35 milligrams of IV vitamin C. There's just not. And at this point they say, we don't have that here.
No, well, you don't mean 20 to 30 milligrams. You mean 20 to 30 grams.
Right? Grams. Yeah.
Yeah.
20 to 30 grams. So, like, we don't have that here. I'm like, well, order it. It'll be here by tomorrow. Why is that hard? It's not that expensive. Remdesivir is thousands and thousands. It's like a $30,000 treatment for 5 days.
Right.
But they don't get paid back for that. The government pays them to follow their protocol.
So somebody just has to insist.
Mm-hmm. And really, in the end, at this point, really were trying to get to a family conference, like I talked about, so that they have to listen to the family and they have everyone talking. But at that point, I'm like, when you're going to start pulling that string, like the chain of command, you're going charge nurse, manager, director, you know, administration, or if it's nights or weekends that you're going charge nurse, house supervisor. If you're going to start pulling that string, you need to have a lawyer in your pocket.
And on the communication with you?
Well, you at least need to, like, if you go, okay, I'm going to start this, you need to be going, calling any lawyer that you know, even if it's like your business contract lawyer, like, I'm going to need a lawyer for this. In Texas, we have Texas Right to Life, and they have been working as hard as they can, and people are able to hire lawyers out of there. I'm sure they're completely overrun as well, because it's
right.
Just everybody, it's mass pandemonium. But at that point, I just tell people, like, we'll just file suit. The lawyers are always like, you know how lawyers are, they don't play their cards. And so if I'm on a call with a lawyer and they'll text me in the background, like, okay, let's just hang up, we're going to have to file suit. But they won't say, like, I'm going to sue you. They don't do that.
Yeah.
So I'll say, okay, just, you know, to recap, this is what you're going to do, whatever we came up with this, and this is what we're going to do, except for we are not okay with this. And so I'm going to hang up and I'm going to talk to the family and I'm going to get the doctor's names that are involved, the nurse's names, the nurse manager, the CNO, the chief nursing officer, the charge nurse. And we're going to turn all those people into their board for medical neglect and emotional abuse of patients. And we're going to turn this entity into Medicare and Medicaid for fraud and failure to render treatment.
Right.
I'd let you know. And then they're like, I tell people, I have someone right now. They're like, yep, I just turned. And they weren't successful. They didn't have an advocate working with them. And they were in, I don't remember what state, they couldn't find a lawyer in time. And so they're turning everyone in. I'm like, this is like, you signed an oath and you're not following that oath.
Right. Right. Exactly. Okay. I think that last minute or so was really critical, you know, in addition to everything else, since we're almost out of time, I want to address a big issue, which is affecting billions of people right now. And that's that everybody is supposed to get injected with these shots. That, I mean, just to put this in context, everybody always says a lot of these big doctors and everything that are really smart and well-intended, most of them say, I'm not anti-vax. I know vaccines saved humanity and saved the world from polio and smallpox and all this stuff. It's obvious none of us would be here without vaccines. I'm not going to say that. You know, because it's too late to, it always was too late to waste time saying stuff that's not true. And if you do the research, I only took it back to 1796 when Jenner was starting out with the vaccine stuff as an idea that he had. And I can't find any evidence that vaccine prevented disease in history, but I can find a lot of evidence that they were maiming and killing people, especially kids, from the beginning. And they kept getting outlawed and reinstated over and over again. So I can't say I'm not anti-vax. I'm not actually categorically anti-vax. If they turned out to be, you know, a new one that was a health food or something, right, and that you didn't have to use an injection, it might be okay. But there isn't right now. And but the new one is different. As bad as all the ones that led up to it were, the new one is designed to change your genetic code. Mm-hmm. That's not a good idea, you know, unless you're smarter than God. And I don't get the impression that they are. And they also don't have very good motives. And it does very bad things to people, including, apparently, from what I can tell, about 1 out of 200 people that gets it dies quickly. And the other ones, according to animal tests, die later, mm-hmm, you know, in a relatively short time. Mm-hmm. So, And you can see very quickly the health authorities working with the government, which is a form of fascism, actually, with the government delegating its power to, you know, non-accountable entities, so it can do anything it wants. It's getting to the point where you'll have to carry a punch card to show if you've had this week's vaccine. So I guess it's worth a sentence or two about why not to take them, and then we'll deal with and agree or not with me that they have no benefits at all, especially the current one. And then we'll see what to do if they start forcing it.
Well, I mean, I've read a lot about the vaccines. I read all the old studies were in the animal models where they all died.
COVID vaccine.
Yes. Yeah. You know, we have like an mRNA message wrapped in three lipoproteins that have never been tested right. in humans, and they're finding them in ovaries and other places when they're looking for those lipoproteins. But I worked on an exemption with the genetic doctor so that he wouldn't have to get the COVID-19 vaccine for his job. And he said he's read all the literature, and he said, this is literally genetic suicide. I'm not going to do it. Like, I will quit my job and take my money and just, I can live the rest of my life. You could not pay me. And I'm like, right on. The OB, yeah. Most doctors that I get wanting religious exemptions are OBs and fertility doctors and geneticists.
That's interesting.
That's very interesting. I wasn't expecting that, but at the same time, it makes sense. Here we have this drug that really has no testing, and it's an mRNA message, and we're rewriting genetics, and I just can't believe that people think that's a good idea. Now, I will tell you that the current message in the media is that those of us that don't have it, we're so far and few between. And that's just a complete lie. It's a total lie. And they're using that to isolate people in their brains. Like, you're the only ones that are having to deal with this fallout, or you're not going to be able to travel, or you're not going to be able to do this, or whatever it is. And it's just not true. It's just part of that.
You think they won't be able to do that because of the numbers?
I think that right now they can't do that because they don't have the numbers, but their message is that they are getting the numbers. And then, you know, they go back and forth, like, we're getting the numbers, you're the only one. And then, you know, the last weekend, Biden, like, I've had it.
Yeah, right.
You've had it all you want. I'm still not doing it. Whatever.
Our spiritual father, Joe Biden, is getting really upset with us.
He's getting really upset. I'm like,
yeah.
My God is not upset with me. I can tell you that. You can be upset all you want. I really don't care.
What do you think is the difference between the time frame in the U.S. versus Canada, New Zealand, Australia, France, places like that?
I'm thinking that we're going to have a very hard fall. I keep saying I think that it's going to get worse before it gets better. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be some weak people that are going to fall because they can't take it. But there are so many people out there who are not on board with this. Lots of people that would be like, I used to think you were nuts, or like, yep, you called it the whole time, you know. And I kind of get to these people who are like, I would never take this vaccine, and then they'll contact me, and I'll go, I just need you to back up. Like, back up. This didn't just happen. Like, this freight train left decades ago, and you need to really look into that and own up to it. Like, stop it with your butt polio. But polio, just stop. Like, you really need to take a step back and realize it takes a long time to get people to this point where they will hand over their freedom. They will lock themselves up. They will muzzle their children. They will take a vaccine with basically no testing. That's a genetic code. It takes a long time to get to that point. You need to open your eyes and look at it.
Right. So a lot of people are in two categories of fear about it if they know it might not be good for them. One is they'll lose their job. The other is they can't go in the store.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What do you tell people when they say, well, this is why I don't know what to do?
I just tell people there's a lot of us and we're going to figure it out. Like, we're going to figure it out. But if you roll over and you decide genetic roulette is okay for temporary comfort, that you're going to get to go on a airplane to the Maldives.
Yeah.
It's not going to work out well for you. Like, you're in a moment of time where you have to make a really big decision for you and your family, for your longevity. And America has taught you instant gratification and being spoiled and having all the things you want, you know, in your credit card debt and all that for a long time. And this is the moment that you have to give it up. Like, just rent an RV instead. You will be fine.
Right.
You know, but I just tell people, it's like I tell my community, because so many people in my community know me. I'm like, well, we're going to figure it out. It's going to be fine, but we're going to be the ones that are going to hold our ground, and that's the end of that.
Seems like people supporting each other would be a good idea too.
Yeah.
Just so that they don't feel isolated.
I mean, there's the divide and conquer thing going on in the country right now is huge. You know, like I told you when I came on, I was supposed to go to a funeral tomorrow and I've been disinvited because I'm not vaccinated.
Yeah.
The person that died had 3 vaccines. And I'm like, that's pretty, it's hard to get me upset, but that's pretty upsetting for someone I was pretty close to. But look at what people are doing to each other. People are being terrible to each other.
Right.
Terrible. And it's working. That's all part of the plan. If we're all divided and we feel like it's us versus them, and we're always in a fight about something, or I'm right and you're wrong, it's just the insanity is going to keep going. So it's like, it's fine. If you want to do what you're going to do, but you don't have to be ugly to me about what I'm going to do.
Right.
You know
what would really help is second thoughts on the part of the enforcers. You know, the police that are going closer and closer toward the Australian model for a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
You know about the Milgram experiment, right? You know about the Milgram experiment. This is where I'll just do a short version because we're almost out of time, but it's basically they take people off the street and they say that there's a person in a white coat who's telling them to give a shock to the person on the other side of a visual barrier if they get answers to certain things wrong or things like that. And they start turning up the voltage and see if the person will do it. And even the people who get really upset and say, I don't want to do it. The person's screaming. It's an actor getting the shock. And they start screaming. And then there's this silence, you know, and maybe they hear him fall over or something. And the person is saying, I don't want to keep doing this. This is terrible. And the authority figure says, you have to. You just have to finish it. And when they get done with the test, even when they kill the person on the other side of the screen, the person was asked, why did you do it? And he said, they made me do it, you know, because I was ordered by an authority figure. I had no choice. Yeah. That's hypnosis.
It is. Like, you always have a choice. You always have a choice.
Yeah.
And the choice you make might be temporarily uncomfortable, but you still have a choice.
Yeah. And somewhere under all the programming, you actually have common sense too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're not supposed to remember, but it's still there.
Yep.
So, without overwhelming you anymore in your own place of work, is there any way that people can stay up to date with what you're doing and what you're finding out and new information you want to share and things like that?
You know, I don't really have an answer for that right now because I'm rearranging.
Okay.
I'm having to rearrange because I'm overrun and it's like to the point that I can't get anything done.
Right.
I am trying to, you know, when God gives you a message and you're being dense and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm like, what am I going to do? I can't do all this. And then I started getting emails. I think it was Friday. I'm a nurse. I'm not going to have a job anymore because I'm not going to be vaccinated. And I'm horrified at what's going on in the hospital. I would love to be a patient advocate. And after me, the first time going, are these people crazy? I'm not hiring. Like, I don't have time for this. And when I got to the fourth or fifth email, I went, oh, thank you. Because I kept going, I don't know what to do. I need ideas. And finally, I'm like, oh, I just need to hire people and train them.
Exactly. You need to step back a level.
Right.
So and that then it's not you doing it. It's them.
Exactly. Like, I can just answer the questions or step in when things get really out of hand, whatever. I do need more lawyers.
You become the advocate teacher.
I have a voicemail on my phone from a lawyer. Like, can you please help me with this patient? I'm like, okay. So
these are gifts and clues, right?
Right. And so I'm like, okay, well, my spare time that doesn't exist, I've already talking to a few people. And so I want to hire a few patient advocates and then I can just run them through the company for like scheduling and billing and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm working on that. I'm forming that offer and plan in my sleep practically. And I'm hoping Friday I can tackle that, but we just need more people. And I'm sorry, if I have an advocate, you have to kind of have to be a bitch like me. Like you have to be totally fine with conflict.
That's in the job description.
Yeah. Like I tell people, you have to be okay with conflict. If you know, like, I really don't like conflict, you cannot do this job.
Well, not only do you have to be okay with it, you have to know what your array of tools are.
Yeah.
Because if you're okay with conflict, but they overpower you, that doesn't work well.
I think sometimes the families actually have a lot of power. And I do have some people that have watched my Dr. Artist show. I had a pastor that called me way up from the panhandle last week and was like, thank you so much. I called this family. They did exactly what you said. And they got that guy turned around and he's home now and God bless you. And so there are people that
good,
can do that. Everyone has different personalities. And so there are some people that are like, I just really need somebody to help me. And I'm like, I just really don't, like, I have my own caseload that I'm dealing with. You know
what
I mean?
Right.
So I think if I could even just find people that can do that, and people were like, yes, I want to hire someone to help me so that I can do everything I can for this person, then that's what we need to do. And I feel a little dense. It didn't occur to me before everyone started emailing.
It has to be the right time anyway.
Yeah.
You know, because maybe you've gone through enough so that now it fits right together.
Mm-hmm.
Making yourself unnecessary on your current level.
You know, and I think part of me just thought, wow, this is so horrible. Like, this can't keep up forever. And then it really hit me that, no, it's bad. It's getting worse. This now that the hospitals have done this with this subject, where are we going to be with all the other subjects or all the other diseases and things like that in the future? So they just like, you made your bed. You're going to have to lie in hospitals, and now we're coming for you. I don't know what else to tell.
Yeah, exactly. And an organization is going to form by itself around what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're just going to be making sure it stays on track.
Yep.
Sounds exciting to me.
Yeah. So I'm like, I'm overrun. Don't ever be like, yes, that's amazing, and find my office email.
Right.
But if there's somebody out there who's like already run huge organizations or done anything sort of similar that wants to help, like I always tell people, don't just message me to message me. Like, if you really have something to offer me, then message me, because I'm too overrun. But I do get people every once in a while, I'm like, yes, that's exactly what I need. Please help me, because I'm a judge personality. That's why I'm good at this, but I cannot invent my way out of a paper bag.
Right. Exciting. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll try not to harass you for a while for any more shows.
I want to help everyone. I really do. But
I know.
It's hard to just be like, I just can't respond. It's not even possible.
Well, it's just saying the organizational work now mm-hmm. is top priority.
Yep.
You've got to clone yourself.
Yeah,
and then you step back and just watch over the clones that they do the right thing.
Yeah. And I think even just rewatching the segment of what, you know, where I kind of went through, this is the chain of command and this is where you need to go, or watching the Dr. Artist show more than once, like where you're like, yes, that's what I need to do. She can help me. I'm like, no, watch it again.
Yeah.
Take notes and like really get the process down and go, oh, she said I need to find a lawyer in case we get to that point.
Right.
You know, yeah. and do it. Like you can do it. You don't have to, you're not like cussing people out. You're steadfastly with a spine of steel. Like, I understand
your pain,
but.
And if you start feeling helpless, recognize it's a program.
Yep.
It's not you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not true.
True. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Exciting. Hold on. We'll say goodbye in the break here and talk to you soon. Okay, you guys, that was Michelle Rauten, and I've been wanting to get her back on for quite a few months now because we hadn't talked to her. I don't think we've had her on during the pandemic, official pandemic time. And she's done some great work. She's overwhelmed now, so we don't want to send people to communicate with her unless they are just, you know, perfectly suited to be a real hardcore patient advocate in the hospital for people that need to be protected against harmful practices and things like that. She's made a place called Wonderfully Made Wellness Sanctuary in Texas. And again, don't flood them with communications because she's overwhelmed at the moment, but you can watch what they're doing, read about what they're doing. And as I say, in addition to the interview that we just did, she did a great interview with Dr. Brian Artis. You know, none of us are or should be competing at all for viewers. We should be supporting each other. And when somebody's doing good work like Dr. Artis is doing, I'd like to send people to his interviews because they've been great. Anyway, Michelle is saving a lot of people's lives at the moment with information, and we want to support that. So there are parts of the interview that we just did where she gets into really specific protocol suggestions, and I think it would be good to listen to those as many times as you need to get it to sink in. How to protect people that you're connected to in the hospital, that you don't want to be mistreated. There's some really good suggestions for that. How to stay out of the hospital. She went over personal protocols that she likes, and then hopeful insight into the fact that she thinks there's so many of us, if we can stay in touch with each other, that they're not going to be able to turn the world into the prison camp that they want. And I think hopefully she's right, and we'll all do the most we can to see that come about. So I'm not going to give you any special sites to go connect with Michelle, because she doesn't have any right now. She's just, watch for her name, Michelle Rowton, Rowton, appearing on other people's shows, Dr. Artis, our show, and I'm sure more. And she'll be in demand all over the place on the good platforms, I'm sure. I think that's about it. It was a little longer than we planned, but she was nice enough to stay in touch with the platforms that were still on the air by going to lostartsradio.com. And you can find all the show links there to all the free archives, which are extensive, and our new platforms on BitChute and Brighteon, where we've been for a long time on Blog Talk Radio, and quite other audio and visual platforms, audio and video. I think that's about it. We have donate buttons there if you want to help us stay on the air at lostartsradio.com, and also at subscribestar.com/lostartsradio. The funds are very helpful and would make the difference between us keeping going and not. And then if you want to get deeper into all of this work and start upgrading your own lifestyle, like Michelle was talking about, and get into aspects of changing consciousness, which changes situations, we do that at planetaryhealingclub.com. So you're welcome to check that out, planetaryhealingclub.com. And I think that's about it. So the main thing is take care of yourself, especially when things are challenging like they are now. Keep yourself in good physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual shape. It's the most generous thing you can do, because if you take care of yourself, it spreads and encourages other people. So I think, you know, it's important to remember that. Take care of yourself. It's the opposite of what we're being told, that we're each insignificant because we're only one person. And it's the opposite. Anybody who really puts the work in, upgrades their own lifestyle, puts the focus into a positive mindset to help others, is going to be more important than millions who are asleep. So you can do as much good as you let yourself do. Take care of yourself. And I think that's about it. Now, this is our Sunday show. We have a Saturday show too, which is on Saturday afternoon, U.S. time, 4:30 Pacific and 7:30 Eastern. And that's a half hour before the meeting of Planetary Healing Club. And I'll see you at both of those. Take care of yourself and have a good week. And we'll see you next time.